Welcome to the Mock Draft Special Edition of the Draft Doctors Podcast for the 200th episode of the show. We've got a massive episode lined up. We recently had a mock draft with some of the best drafters in the fantasy community, plus Cam joined in as well. We'll be dissecting that and also answering a bunch of listener questions. I'm Doss, and here, celebrating their huge 200 milestone, are the Draft Doctors founders, Stevie Fizz and Jono Crockett. Steve, when you and Jono made that very first episode way back on December 15th, 2015, did you ever think you'd be notching up the double century?
No. I thought we'd quit after about three episodes, and honestly, the results show we should have.
And Jono, plenty to be proud of and perhaps ashamed of from across the years at the Draft Doctors, but what achievement are you most proud of? Would the ultimate achievement be creating the phrase wheelbag, or perhaps the mock draft simulator? Congratulations on the 200, and can you tell us a bit about the simulator that is available for all drafters now?
Yeah, well, it's pretty close between wheelbag and the mock site, but I think it will go to the mock site, which is up and going now. So basically, Steve was the one driving it. He stole it, like we've done everything else with this show, from American Fantasy Sports, and because it's massive over there in the States. And so what they do in America is they have the mock site where you can run through a draft simulator, and just to get an idea of where players are going to fall in your draft, so you can look to get the best value and get those picks ahead of your teammates.
Fantastic stuff. Plenty of people already using it, and it's looking awesome. Here as well are my fellow B-team operators, Cam Corns and the Statesman. Welcome, lads, and congrats, Papa Cam.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I'm operating on about an hour of sleep, and looking forward to tearing up your team.
Yeah, for sure. And g'day, Statesman. How are you, mate?
Yes, I'm very well, and I must admit, obviously, the probably major addition that the Draft Doctors have had throughout their 200 shows, but probably the way I've been operating for the past couple of months, at the end of the day, just proves how desperate they were to get some talent on. And unfortunately, the result hasn't been too good since I've been here, but it's great to have you, finally, someone with a good voice on board, Doss. Welcome to you.
I do apologise to all the listeners without Jono's smooth dulcet tones for the 200th episode. Okay, guys, this is the Mock Draft Special brought to you by the Draft Doctors Mock Draft Simulator. Check it out at mock.thedraftdoctors.com.au and start your very own mock today. Now, quickly, a bit about this mock draft. The draft occurred January 24th to 27th, which is important considering a few things have happened since then. But the basic rules, it was a 10-team, 18-round draft with a 5-7-1-5 setup. AFL Fantasy scoring with captains on. And if you do want more information about the mock draft, there's an article up on the website listing every single pick, so you can read along as you listen to this as well. We'll quickly run through the first three rounds of the draft before we get into our individual strategies we employed. But a brief introduction to our other drafters. We had Archie and Zaino from Over the Line Sports, Warney from DT Talk and the Traders, Christian from the Extended Bench, and Statesman's best mate, We Got Big Cox, along with us five. Statesman, could you take us through what went down in the first round of this mock?
Most certainly, and it will be no surprise. It's probably out of one of three players that's going to go at number one for any of our drafts this year now that Mitchell has gone, because he was probably guaranteed to be number one. But it was no surprise that Archie actually went the ruck option of Brody Grundy. So as the traders would call our ruck pig. At the end of the day, if you are hot on him, you need to go early, because he will go in the first probably five picks, to be honest. And at the end of the day, he's just a standout when it comes to ruckman. So there's a lot of question marks of what else is going to happen across the board. So if you want that big point difference in your ruckman, you need to go early on him. Zaino went McRae at number two. So obviously the highest averaging midfielder from last year. Obviously, there is a little bit of a concern that it's about a 15-point rise from any other season he had. So whether he keeps those points rolling or not is a big question mark. I think Warney, obviously this pick fell on him, but I think it's clearly the choice he had to make, and a good one in Paddy Dangerfield being the forward option. That has nothing to do with Cam. I want to make that absolutely clear. It's just we've got a potential 120 scoring forward on the board. So good pick by Warney there. Doss, in a very strange way, has gone for his young boys again. It's a bit of a question mark we've got to raise with him. But Patrick Cripps, who obviously had his major breakout year in 2018, slipped at number four. Cam went Zeret, which I think was a pretty good pick at the time, but obviously he's had some concerns and some challenges since his concerns as well that might see his pre-season interrupted in a major way rather than a minor way from the start, picking him up at pick five. Cogs went to Christian at pick six. It's an interesting one between Cogs and Josh Kelly, what's going to happen, because Josh Kelly went to Big Cox at seven. We're unsure how they're going to play out, but I think it's fair to say they're going to get decent points, but who gets attention will be the big question mark. Now, the great man himself, 200 shows, congratulations to Fizz. He went Aloyd and going the number one defender. Jonathan actually followed suit and going with Laird, which I reckon was a pretty poor call. He's probably the defender or key defender that's actually going to drop away. Jonathan, you can actually talk about that later on. And then, of course, as normal, I was the last pick, which seems to happen every draft we have. And I picked up Lachie Neal.
All right, awesome. We'll discuss the first couple of few rounds a bit more in detail soon. But Cam, can you take us through the second round?
Yeah, so on the way back, Statesman picked up Whitfield, which is a pretty good combo for his Lachie Neal first pick. And Jonathan decided to go, you know, both ends of the stick, and he's picked up a forward in the lunch meet. Stevie Fizz, I thought, gave an interesting look at something that could happen this year and something that's a little bit different in getting a second defender. So he's picked up Lloyd in the first round and Simpson in the second round, which I think is a really good strategy going in with the rule changes. We got Big Cox, took Andrew Gaff second, so that's two mids in a row, and Christian's gone Elliot Yeo, also backing in that two mids in a row strategy for the mid-tier draft range. I ran in with Matt Crouch, following that same strategy. Connor Blakely went to Doss, and Doss, how do you feel about that injury, mate?
Well, obviously, it's just a mock draft, so I'm not too devastated by it, but I'd be interested in you guys' thoughts once we've gone through the three rounds as to where he falls to now, perhaps. But yeah, it's pretty devastating. Obviously, my team looks a bit gross now with having him as my D1, but yeah, you got to live with that sometimes.
Let's just not cloud over the fact that your team looks gross anyway, so we'll move on. Warney took Clayton Oliver at his second pick. Sick Dog at Zeno's second pick, and then finally Archie to round out the second round took Tay-Tay Adams.
All right, Jono, can you take us through that third round?
Yeah, so on the turn there, Archie got his first forward in Isaac Heaney. So with the first pick of Grundy, we're going to talk about it a bit later, but how it's going to affect your position drafting later on the draft. So he's gone ruck, mid, forward. I personally probably would have gone another midfielder or even grabbed a defender, but that's how he went. Zeno has gone with Dunkley, so a nice balance there to start off his draft. Warney's grabbed a defender in Witherden, who we all think is going to be right up there. Again, solid pick. Doss has come in with another midfielder with Gus Brayshaw. Cam, Seb Ross, quality pick there. You're not going to miss to that. So he's gone three midfielders in a row. Again, we'll talk to him about that, and maybe he might be a bit weaker in other positions. The second one, Ruckman, went off the board with Big Maxi Gorn going in the third round. Again, he's got two midfielders in front of him, so good picks there. Big Coxie took Toby McLean, so he's mid forward. Steve Fizzman, he got his first midfielder, Adam Treloar, at the back end of the third round, is a very solid pick. I think we had the group chat going, and we all commended that pick there. My pick was Dane Beams for my first midfielder, and the Statesman grabbed old Dusty Martin.
All right, cool. That's the first three rounds of our draft. Steve, did the first three rounds play out the way you would have expected there?
Yeah, pretty closely. I think you know, I think the question mark's going to be where the Gorn goes. I think it's going to be pretty heavy on defenders. You'll see a few forwards in there and just a whole raft of mids. But, yeah, I certainly expect... I think now with Blakely's injury, it's going to really make it key. And I think to get those defenders, and I think it'll probably boost Lloyd up the first round, maybe to sort of pick six. I would expect that, and I think all those first four defenders will be gone by the end of the second.
Yeah, could we quickly touch on the Connor Blakely and Ollie Wines injuries? Blakely went in the second round to me at pick 17, and Wines went in the seventh round, pick 70. Blakely's likely to miss around six rounds or something, maybe more. We don't really know too much yet. And Wines is still a slight chance for round one, but very doubtful. Jono, what were your thoughts on where they go now and who else gets boosted by their absence?
Well, with Connor Blakely, depending on how deep your league is, shallow leagues, forget all about it. But 5-7-1-5, if you've drafted really well, he could be a possible bench option, especially if it does say he misses the first two or three rounds. So I'd be looking at that. And Ollie Wines, I'd be tagging him at the back end of my draft as well if it is a 5-7-1-5 like we did, and plonking him on the bench. Now, in terms of upside of who's getting the bump, there's a plethora of options there at the Freo Dockers. We've talked about Luke Ryan, Nathan Wilson. Brad Hill apparently is in the form of his life, so he might go slot into that back line there. Hal Reese Conker, no one's spoken about him, but he's someone who could get that Connor Blakely off the half back role. So plenty of options there at Fremantle. Steve?
Well, but he was never going to... Like, we were never drafting him as though he was playing defence. That's the thing. We were drafting him as though he was playing midfield.
Yeah, well, we just expect to get Andrew Brayshaw, but they're the guys who can still roll through that midfield as well. Port Adelaide, well, you got Rocky is your number one, Sam Palpepper. Time on ground's a big thing at Port Adelaide that we missed out on. Certainly not going to be Jack Watts because he's too busy swimming and snorting, so... And there's talk of Ebert even going back into that midfield, which we did see him a few years ago as well. As a South Australian, what are your thoughts on who gets the bump there at Port Adelaide?
I actually honestly want to think, and I saw Statesman react to your comment before about Tom Rockliffe, but I don't think he's done yet, honestly. And I think when you look at the time on ground stats, it was clearly just a mixture of injury and role. And when the role's opened up now, it just comes down to his body. So if I don't see anything to do with his body in the preseason, I'd be pretty high that he's gonna be producing another solid season. But whether you get, you know, even close to 20 odd games would be pretty doubtful around that. So other than that, I wouldn't be too keen on anyone apart from maybe, I suppose, Statesman earlier call a couple of weeks ago about Robbie Gray maybe getting a bit of a boost and heading into the midfield. So is there any other thoughts on those first three rounds before we sort of look at the draft as a whole? Stato.
Well, the first one is Gaff actually missing the first two rounds?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. So if he is, he's gone early in the second round. So we're looking at him at pick 14. So when we're then talking about Ollie Wines, who potentially may miss round one, so therefore, let's face facts, he's probably going to be playing by round three. So we're only talking missing a couple of weeks. Therefore, it probably shouldn't be held back later in the draft. My only issue is that shoulders in that type of position are a big risk. So all of a sudden, he becomes riskier rather than his scoring is going to be affected. He's just got a higher risk of re-injuring a shoulder. With Gaff, obviously he's going to come in fresh, but if you're willing to take a second round pick on Gaff and he's guaranteed to only play a maximum of 20 games, then I think, well, at the end of the day, small injuries are small injuries. I will say with Wines straight away, it's a regret of mine that I picked him up in the seventh round because I picked him up thinking I was going to get Taranto the next time, and I missed the man I actually wanted by doing so. So sometimes, even though your rankings, and I looked at the rankings and went, no, this is where I need to go, but my gut just told me Taranto's the man, he's going to get a big bump of what's happening. So there's a regret there, and then he gets injured, so it serves me right for picking him where I did.
And so Cam, you've got some other thoughts.
Yeah, the only comment on Wines, and look at McLean and look at Ablett and look at a few others who have gone down with shoulder injuries in the past. It's not just that you can re-injure it so easily. It's a complete mindset change in how you attack the football, because you're all of a sudden a little bit more worried about how hard you can go at it before it does get re-injured. So you'll see maybe potentially less pressure acts, less tackles, less. So for me, it's probably, I think 7 is probably a little bit too early now, but somewhere in the 8th and 9th is maybe right.
Alrighty, well, let's review the mock draft as a whole. We have a few topics. We'll go around the room, so to speak, and discuss each one. First up, did you have a set strategy or did one evolve through the draft? Or were you just picking based on the best value on the board? Do you want to kick us off there, Steve?
I think I think Steve went in strong with defenders early, as we actually saw. And I'll be honest with my strategy. I have a plan, but I'm also happy to react to what's happening. So I saw Steve go early, so it was and I think Jono responded in kind. So we saw Lloyd and Laird go in the first round. Now, I probably agree with a Lloyd first round pick. I probably don't really agree with a Laird, because I think Laird's one that may drop with this new information. I think Lloyd will go up. So I took it as an opportunity. I still had to get a captain option, and that's where I'll go at Jono a little bit here and going, he waited until the third round, which was late in the third round before he got his midfielder. And I'm not comfortable where his captain is, seeing captains are on in this draft. But I'll let him respond to that after I react to what I'm doing. So my immediate thought was I need to square away midfielders and defenders, happy that I could pick up forwards late in the draft. And my last pick in the 18 was always going to be a ruckman, and it was whoever's left, because outside Grundy, I'm not convinced anyone's going to have a blinder year. There'll probably be 5 or 6 ruckmen that do, but I can't be sure who they are, so why take the risk? So that's why I went midfielders and defenders when I could. It made me regret a little bit because Mundy ended up being my number one forward. I don't know if I'm that comfortable with that. But now Blakely's out, it actually might work for me, to be honest. So my reaction was, rather than grab a second midfielder at pick 2, seeing Lloyd and Laird were gone, I needed to use that opportunity to take the only one I was really happy with at D1, which was Whitfield. So that's the only strategy I had. I then reacted and saw who was the next best talent, whatever column, trying to fill my defenders. But I will say, here's some D5s across the board, and I think I was wrong. So I think there are a lot more defenders that, yes, there's some risk with them, but there's some defenders with some real value. So here's some of the D5s. Pierce Hanley, Michael Hibbard, Luke McDonald, Houston, Vlosten, Ryan Clark, and KK. I think all of those are pretty good D5s.
Potentially.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a lot of upside.
I reckon there's a lot more riskier F5s.
Oh, well, we can talk about that, I guess. I think there's sort of a lot of guys in the same boat. Sorry, I was just sidetracked. Baby Fizzes had a moment today, whatever, but that's fine. Yeah, so we spoke about it before. I went the back-to-back defenders in round 1 and 2, and part of that reasoning was I wanted to, like, this is a mock draft. I don't want to sit, I don't need to draft the best team or the best on-paper team. I want to see what my team looks like, doing a strategy that I may employ going into my main drafts, but also want to see if I can shape the drafts, because if the people behind me start reaching on crummier defenders, people who I've got down the list, then it's going to squeeze some other good players, most likely midfielders, down the order. And that's what happened. In round 3, I was sort of sitting there, and it looked like Seb Ross was going to get back to me, who I'm pretty keen on this year, Adam Treloar ended up getting back to me because Seb Ross got snapped up a couple of rounds before me. I'm very comfortable with that scenario. And at the end of the day, the way my team sort of balanced out over the next few rounds, I was really, really quite happy. I was able to grab the forward in round four and so square away my F1. But my whole idea was just to grab those defenders early and just completely punt forwards after my F1.
Now, just hypothetically, if Treloar went instead of Gorn, so all of a sudden, who I think Treloar was a magnificent pickup late in the third and a great captain option, there's no doubts about that. But if he was gone, where would you have looked at? Would you have gone a midfielder still?
Yeah, probably Dusty.
Yeah.
I'm pretty comfortable with Dusty this year. Obviously, I've got... Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say obviously, but I do have Treloar a tier ahead, but it's not much.
Yep.
So it sort of... it really sort of fell my way, and then after that, I sort of had defenders away and other people were sort of scrambling, and I was really interested to see whether people would reach or whether people would look to other areas like, oh, well, forwards and mids are falling, I'll go that way. And some I thought reached and some I thought played it pretty well and were just kind of happy to wear the maybe the not 110 defenders but maybe the sort of defenders who can go 90s. I was able to square away a lot of mids through the 7, 8, 9, 10 sort of rounds and then just grab the forwards with upside at the end I think have upside at the end. And at the end of the day, I'm pretty comfortable with where my forward line is. Like, Wingard is my F1. I think that's pretty nice. Then, Parrish, JJK, Lysette could be anything if Ryder goes down. And realistically, these are low equity picks, so I'm pretty happy if I end up having to use the waiver wire on them.
I would like to know from the others, but I certainly felt with four exceptions, I got who I felt I wanted at each of the rounds. So the four was Treloar, I missed by two, but my result was getting Dusty. So I wasn't too upset with that. I really wanted to get Akers, but I missed out on him and I was taking him three picks later. So that was a little bit unfortunate for me. Taranto was my own stupid fault because I picked Wines instead of him, but I should have gone that man at the time. And Toby Green, I thought, was going to roll through a little bit later, so I missed out on him. So they were the only four that I generally wanted to get at that pick that didn't arrive. What about you, Jono?
Well, just to kick it off, going back to the first couple of rounds there about Laird, I've got no qualms with Laird. I don't think he's going to drop off off the face of the cliff like you're predicting, so quite comfortable on that. With the captains on league, I'm not too fussed. I wasn't too fussed about grabbing a perma-captain, especially in this mock draft. I wanted to see who I could grab as well and then just throw it around the dartboard, essentially, as a week-to-week captain. Look at matchups. I might be able to extract maybe 10, 15 more points if I went that way instead of, say, you locking in a Lachy Neal from week to week. I did want to try something similar to Steve. He went defender-defender. I went defender-forward and then see what I could get throughout the mids there. I did have my sights set on Treloar, but Steve took him there. But very happy with Dane Beams. Dusty, not super keen on him in the Dream Team format. Like him more for the super coach, but happy with Beams. And then on that turn, I went Beams Duncan. So pretty happy with some solid midfielders there to begin with.
I reckon your squad would look good if you actually had Treloar at three.
Definitely.
Because Beams is such an injury risk, even though we know he's a great scorer, that sort of sticks out to me going, oh, I don't... And it's a result because someone else just jumped before you, but it's made me feel, oh, I don't feel so secure with Steve's team. Now, there's...
Jono's team's fucking rolled gold, mate.
Sorry. I always think of you, Steve. That's what it is. I just forget about Jono. But but I'm happy to say that you've got a top six defender, you've got a top six forward. Even if they have a downturn, you're thereabouts. But it was that Beams at number three that just made it not look
well.
Right.
I was also looking at Parker there in the fifth round as well, and which Steve, Sloan in the fifth round, which Steve grabbed, but Parker in the fifth, still very happy with. So yep.
He could end up being a captain.
Exactly
option.
Right. He could be anything this year. So. Yep. My team was sort of team vanilla, just going around, just trying to grab the best what's around me available and not really go on any runs and do something different to what the other people around me were doing.
Yeah, I love that, Joe, and you and I have both done the same thing, trying out different strategies, and honestly, like, we were lucky enough to be able to assemble a great crew of guys to do a draft with. But honestly, the best place to try different strategies, the mock draft website. Like, take a ruck in round one, take two forwards, take whatever. Like, you can try all these things out, it doesn't matter, and see what your team looks like.
Yep, exactly right. It's got the printable PDF there if you do sign up and see what's behind the paywall there, so all good.
Current ADPs this year?
Yep, exactly right.
A lot of good features.
Can I just have a big question? There was a major failure. Well, there were actually two major failures at round four. So one was Tim Kelly in the forward line. But the other one in the forward line that I think we need to talk about very quickly is Billings in round four. So could we explain DOS first?
Well, I think if we're talking the strategies like we are,
That was a strategy?
No, this is one that you're saying, was there any time you missed a player as well? And that's exactly where this went. I think it went through basically all my tier one forwards that I had there. And I just wanted to grab one that I wouldn't be too disappointed with before getting sort of to the scraps. And I just wanted an F1 of some sort to be able to be look okay on my team. And at that stage, I was looking at some of the names remaining, like the Hoff, who... we don't know what's going to happen with his drop-off. We're predicting maybe 10-plus with the hit-outs that he's going to be missing. And then the guys that are remaining there are guys like Toby Green, who's just, you know, trash statesman. So, no, I was pretty happy picking up Billings. And the articles that have been released since, I'm even happier with, you know, his hashtag mid-time coming his way. But I think I went that direction because we had Chad Wingard, Menegola, and Tim Kelly, who you think is going to be bad, I think actually is going to be okay. They went right before me, and I sort of, that was one of the stages where I think it was a little bit of a panic. Probably should have gone the Hoff in hindsight, but
what?
Either way, I mean...
No!
Well, either way,
no.
I mean...
The ruck, the forward you should have chosen went two rounds later.
That'd be great. Or GPTL.
Nah. Mundy!
Or Mundy.
Mundy. God, that's such a good pick.
Have I jumped down?
DOS frozen. Good. Get out
of
here.
No, my question for Cam is, how does he pick up Brad Crouch before JPK?
Yeah, and how did I end up getting both? So that's, you know, good for me, I guess. I mean, to be honest, from a strategy perspective in that first three rounds, I sort of see that there's... you look at a tree and all the branches that come off it, right? And it's sort of if, then, else from, like, a programming... perspective, like, if this happens, then I'll do this, else I'm gonna do this, right? And you make these sort of statements in your first three rounds, and then after then it's responding to trends and picks and all of that sort of stuff to then pick the best team. But you go in with a couple of hypotheses that are your base of your tree for your first three rounds, and you go from there. And for me this year, it was, or for this draft specifically, it was that I thought that 15 key positions were going to go in the first three rounds, right? I was pretty close, so 14 was the actual number. But that meant that I could sort of pick for an area that is being left behind, which is mids, in regards to going mid, mid, mid. And what I sort of ended up with there was three mids that potentially could be a captain choice most weeks, depending on the matchup, switch it around, and go nuts. It did leave me a little bit exposed in the defenders. I basically forfeited getting any of the top six defenders, or, you know, even top 10 defenders. My first defender is Zach Tui, who should see a bump from the kick-in rule this year. And my first forward, as I mentioned before, was Tim Kelly. But after the first three mids, I then backed myself in to get four key positions. So it was key position forward, then defender, second forward, and then a ruckman in Goldie in the sixth. I mean, I feel like I was pick five, right? So you're sort of left in this no man's land in regards to you can't start a run, you don't want to finish a run, and you're kind of, I guess, left at the behest of everyone before you and after you. So I thought, if I can pick the area that no one else is going to be drafting, and this year it looks like it could be mids, you're going to end up with a bloody amazing midfield if you draft first three picks mids in that position.
But can I say that I'm not exactly sure that pick five leaves you in the middle of nowhere. It's actually only the first pick that gets everything structured. Everyone else is in the middle all the time. The only difference is whether you're on a turn or not, where you can double down. So, and what I mean by that is, as soon as pick eight's gone, everyone that was pick two, three, and four are actually in the middle. So all of a sudden, they're waiting and they're responding to someone else's run. At the end of the day, I think the ultimate position of any draft is that sort of mid-range. So whether five or six in a 10-person draft is almost the ultimate position, because I think that's when you can actually start runs. I'm more comfortable on a turn.
Sorry to cut you off there, mate, but I completely disagree. In regards to, so around pick five, you've got the longest time between drinks for anyone on the board besides pick six, right? So if I'm one or two or three, I can plan for probably the gap between when I pick and when my next pick is. And I can do that every single round. Every single round at pick five, you can start your planning probably two picks ahead for one pick. And then you have to restart your planning again the next round. It is, I just reckon it's a much harder position to draft in.
Yeah,
Where would you rather draft?
On the turn. So I think the favourable places are 1, 2, and then maybe 9, 10 in any draft.
I always say the best spot's 3 or 8, or 2 away from the end, because I can see what people have behind me. And like, I was pick 8 in this draft. I was good enough to give myself that pick. And there was Jono and Stason were behind me, and I go, oh, well, these guys are lacking forwards, or, you know, they're lacking defenders, or they're lacking mids. I've got a couple players in mind. I'll grab the one, you know, from the, you know, if I've got a three tier two defenders and one tier two mids, but you guys need a mid, well, I'll make sure I grab that mid, and one of the other guys are going to get back to me. I really think you can control things so much easier when you're two away from the turn.
Can I actually say that I want to reevaluate where I prefer my position? I would say right now that I prefer to always draft right behind Jono, because he's never going to select the player that I'm going to select.
And that is true. Unless it's Lockie Neal, I'm going to shark it every time from now on.
Yes.
All right, I'm back, guys. Can you hear me?
No, who's this?
No.
Just quickly on Cam, just on Cam's strategy, I actually thought he played it pretty well.
He did?
I think you can. You're not going to lose your league by drafting three gun mids straight off the bat. Like, even if, like, I don't think Zach Tui has the most upside in the world, probably not someone I'm looking to draft as my D1. Again, with Tim Kelly, same sort of boat. But I don't think you're going to lose too many friends by drafting, like, three gun mids. I would have drafted Matt Crouch if I wasn't employing my two defender strategy early, and maybe that sort of shaped yours in a little way, Cam. Like, there wasn't that defender who maybe slipped back to you in round three, or maybe, you know, you would have been more comfortable drafting Cade Simpson the second. I don't know. I'm just hypothesising here, but yeah. I think you don't lose any friends doing what you did.
And I think he was one of the ones that actually got the ruck in the right place. So my eyes right now, there's, with everything that's going on, there's one ruck outside the number one who I feel has got upside for this year and is almost guaranteed to be the one that's rolling through, and that's Goldie. So be able to pick him up in round 7 after you've got three gun mids. Forget about the injury that Zerett's going through. So if you had Zerett, who before the injury was probably comfortably in the top six midfielders, you have Matty Crouch who might get there, and you got Sepp Ross, who's just always, he's going to be a bit like Bryce Gibbs, he's just always going to be underrated of what he can actually put out. So all of a sudden you've actually got a pretty good squad up until round 7. I mean, he just ruined it from there, but before round 8 he was doing very well.
Just talking about the ruck strategy there, you got Callum Sinclair in round 17. Did you go in with a clear plan to hold on the rucks, or you just didn't care. Well, who you got?
Yeah, my idea was he was going to be the last pick, and I was on the turn there, so it didn't matter which one I went, to be honest. But I'm not as convinced as others are that Sinclair is just going to be a forward and chop in the ruck. His ruck counterpart's coming from an ACL and isn't in full training yet. So I think they've shown that Cam Sinclair can hold the fort. I think it was the fifth highest scoring ruckman. So to get him so late in that, I was quite happy. There is a risk. I looked at Bell Chambers, but I'm not so convinced, and his pre-season's interrupted. There are plenty of options there, but if you're going Cam Sinclair and you're going him late, you've got to have some sort of coverage in case that's not the one that works out. So the Geelong ruck situation is very interesting because you might have a mature age rookie end up being their number one ruck. We just don't know what's going to happen. So unless you can get Grundy, I'm pretty happy with Goldie, to be honest. Everyone else has got a bit of risk to them. So I think going late is a good thing.
All right, very quickly, if we haven't already done it, did we notice any trends during the draft? Start with Steve.
Done it.
Oh, probably just tacking on to what Statesman said. I think the second tier rucks, once one went, they all went. And I think that's probably going to be pretty common in most people's drafts. For us, I think it was Steph was first off the board, and then, you know, it was
Steph
sort of the
Goldie Mank in the round seven.
Yeah. And the other thing was that I thought the possible or upside forwards went in front of the pretty reliable forwards, which was pretty interesting, I thought. Like, I thought, you know, Billings and these sort of guys were all sort of drafted in front of the guys like Mundy and Buddy even, and I thought that was kind of interesting. Even Boak. Boak went late as hell.
Yeah, round nine.
What did you guys think, Cam?
Yeah, I just had that mid-draft ruck rush as well, to be honest. And the more I thought about it, 7 to 8 seems like the right place to play that card. If you can lead it, that's probably okay. Otherwise, it was more just the pile of defenders early. I also want to quickly note that if you're getting defenders for the change in rules and expecting an upside, there are still going to be defenders available that are the primary kicker for their team at the end of the draft. So the further and further I look back, you can get people. This is people that I drafted, right? But Houston, so he was the primary kicker last year. He should probably retain that this year. Jared Harbrow, with Stephen May gone, Harbrow's going to be probably the primary kicker at the Suns, and they're going to get scored on all day. So potentially lots of kicks there. Shane Savage, St Kilda, terrible, going to be kicking a lot.
I think
if you sit out the first few rounds to miss those, I think there's value later on.
There might be value, but I think the top ones are very, very clearly in front of the others. Like, that's where
Absolutely.
I see the biggest gap.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's more so that I think what was the 70s last year are probably 80s or 82s this year.
Yeah, but those other guys who are on top might go
120 or 110 or something.
Well, like, you know what I mean? They're not. They might still maintain that gap.
Yeah.
They'll just be catching up to the guys like Rory Laird. And the key position guys.
Yeah. The point is, though, that I think you can get multiple of those 82s and over.
Sure, sure.
Where you can only get one of those.
Sure.
Top six.
Sure.
All right, any other trends that people notice before we move on? All right, did anything surprise you from the draft? Who wants to kick us off there? Maybe we'll get Jono's take on this.
Someone else, because I'm looking for my answer.
Yeah, look, I was shocked at a couple of the mids that fell to the third round, mostly Adam Treloar and Seb Ross, and probably some of the guys who I thought were coming in at real unders, guys like Bashahuli and Tom Rockliffe, they went off the board way before I thought. Like, I thought they'd get into the double digits, and they went well ahead of that, and probably the only one that snuck through was Dan Hand, but I was quite surprised at some of the guys I thought were unders. Maybe that's just a symptom of our league and guys maybe, I don't want to say being ahead of the curve or anything like that, but maybe being more prepared to punt on history rather than one bad season.
Anyone else? Yeah, Cam.
So my main thing was that whilst there were a lot of mids taken early and they sort of slid, I think there's probably a right time, in our draft anyway, to take your mid 5-6, because there was a pretty severe drop-off of talent after after round 11, right? So the last mid that was taken, in round 11 was, it looks like, Jack Viney. Before that, Aaron Hall, Rocky, Zaharakis, Tom Phillips, Redden, Ward, all pretty serviceable. But after that, it's pretty thin. So if you're sort of looking at drafting sort of defender or key position early, make sure you're getting your mids sorted by 10 and 11 is what I'd suggest.
Yeah, I think that's what sort of helped my team look pretty passable in the end, was I hit those defenders early, punted the forwards, and then just hammered mids. And, you know, Dan, like, Redden's my sixth midfielder, and according to Twitter, he's an M1. So we're pretty good there. Yeah, I know.
Jeez, I was getting handled with that one. Can I say, I know we're going to talk about really good picks, but I want to compliment Warnie, who I reckon on mid-draft he didn't go so strong. But geez, he nailed his finish. So this is his round 12 to 18. And we're talking picking up some value. Brandon Ellis, who apparently is moving into the midfield. We've heard about that before. But his potential scoring as a defender is actually quite high.
If you're playing VFL,
Jack Martin, who is a dead set Jet, and how he got through to that round 13 is beyond me. Warple, who could be in for a big step up. Hibbard, who has been a primo defender previously at round 15. Nathan Jones, who's a quite serviceable 90-plus midfielder, but question about his role, I understand that, that's why he dropped. Jamie Cripps, who can average 80 as a forward. And then David Swallow is his last midfielder, pick eight, round 18. That's just remarkable.
And I think the patch you're alluding to, where Warnie sort of dipped off a bit, just happened to coincide with when he was down by the beach having a few beers on Australia Day weekend, I think. So maybe that's got something to do with it. All right, before we get to some of our favourite and least favourite picks, a reminder to check out the mock draft simulator on the Draft Doctor's website. Practice your drafting skills against our powerful draft engine. Choose your parameters, whether it's 6 all the way up to 18 teams. AFL Fantasy, Supercoach, Ultimate Footy, we've got you covered. Sign up now for only $9 and you can get unlimited drafts every day. You can download ADPs and your finished drafts, as well as drafting using the Draft Doctor's official ranks. Check it out at mock.thedraftdoctors.com.au and get drafting today. Okay, let's get to the fun part. Best pick in the mock draft, one of your own picks and one of someone else's. Who wants to kick us off? Anyone really excited about their best pick?
I'll kick.
Well, all Statesman picks were good, so maybe go to him.
Except for Wines. I'm not too sure about that one.
No, I'm not either. Look, to be quite honest with you, I think the smartest move I made was the ruck, but we talked about that. So I want to put a bit of polish on someone else's pick. Now, I will say I need to have a crack with Aaron, being at pick at 10, but three rounds later, Doss, you've picked an absolute ripper, and I think he will average a ton this year in Jacob Hopper. And picking him up in round 13, I reckon, is absolutely superb. Congratulations, my pick of the draft.
Wow, your pick of the draft. Oh, thank you very much, Statesman. Yeah, I was pretty surprised he was still there, actually. And I think what I might allude to as well is something bit of a missed opportunity. I think I picked a few players before that I could have rounded out my forward line with, someone like Jack Martin, who also dropped just one pick after or before Jacob Hopper. And I could have had Jack Martin a couple of times before and then got Hopper and had a really well-rounded team. But yeah, I was pretty stoked he dropped that low. Do you think he will. Do you think he's sort of a JLT one that might jump a heap when people get to see his role, though?
Absolutely. The two big bumps you're going to have at GWS is Taranto, who I rate very highly, and that was close to my best pick, but that went round 7. So seeing round 13 is, and put it into Cameron's quotes, Taranto's had a very good pre-season, but Hopper's had a great pre-season. So those two are going to get the bumps through the midfield time. So Hopper, look, I reckon he's a 95 to 105 average in 2019, an absolute ripper in heading into his fourth season.
All right, let's get to the other B team member, Cam. What was your best pick?
Yeah, best pick for myself, I was actually surprised, to be honest, that I could get good-looking Tom Lynch in round 13.
Yeah.
I think that's a really... what, 90 at a team that failed to score a lot, and he's going to a team that's going to get him the ball all the time. Potential, even if he goes 90, right, it's round 13 for a forward. That's brilliant. And for someone else, I'm going to go ahead and say that... I do have it written down, so I apologize.
Am I going two for two here, or?
Going two. You're a crack up. Yeah, sorry, guys. My favourite pick of the draft actually is... actually, someone else go. I need to figure out.
All right, my favourite pick... I actually like my Luke Parker pick at round 5, because... He can go up, or he can slide with that great unknown with Parker. So we can see him go that 90 yep. again, or we can see him go 110. So I'm very happy with that. But someone else...
If someone didn't have the copyright on the hashtag brand, he would be my boy, Parker.
You do like your Sydney boys, don't you, Statesman?
Yeah.
That moan that came from him when you said his name.
Heaney and Parker, oh my. I think a really good pick was in the 14th round was Mitch Wallace. We know he's bleh on the tongue when it comes to drafting, but he actually scores. So he got him round 14. That was Big Cox who got him there, so I didn't mind that pick. Not sure what was Big Cox's forward there. That was his fourth forward, so someone who can go 85-plus as a fourth forward, I didn't mind that. And said it before, Steve's Treloar pick and Sloan pick I liked as well.
Sorry, guys. I had to scroll all the way right to find the pick because it was so late in the draft. It was round 15. Yeah, and to echo someone else's comments before, Warnie taking Hibbard at round 15 for his D5, I think, is superb.
Yep.
There is every chance he goes back to an 85-90 mid defender. Brilliant.
Why is there every chance, though?
Sorry, why is there every chance?
Yeah, I mean, he's done it before, but he looked like he was rubbish last year.
He was rubbish last year due to circumstance.
And so Steve may help that circumstance. Colin Jasny helps that circumstance.
I actually...
Lever coming back helps that circumstance.
Absolutely. So he's a gun player. He's a brilliant runner. He's a great kick of the ball. Right, so where else is he?
Brilliant runner?
I don't think so.
He's quick, mate.
He's a brilliant waddler.
I don't think waddler. He is, mate. I reckon that gets overstated so much.
I reckon he's got a dash. What?
Well, they've got...
Anyway, I think he's got a dash.
Three blokes on that team who play that back roll pretty well, dashing off the back line ahead of him.
So where... It depends where they're going to put Salem.
Oh, he'll be dashing off the back line like he normally does.
But will he? Because he was training...
Well, so is everyone else.
Last year and this year. No, 2 years in a row, though, right? So they're trying to form him into a midfielder, right? Hibbard, probably not.
No, because he's too fat and slow.
Because it's... Look, okay, so give me two... Okay, there's two things, right?
Just say it's a good pick. You don't have to justify it. No one's going to bat for Michael Hibbard.
Okay, well, he's either not going to be in the team, or he's going to be in the team and do well.
Cam, it was only Doss that asked you a question. Just... Wipe it off and move on.
Why do I respond?
Yeah.
Why do I respond?
Don't bite. Don't bite.
What the hell happened to Jaden Hunt, by the way? Anyway, Steve, do you want to give us your best pick?
Yeah, I got a couple. I liked, I thought Jared Harbrow in the 14th. He's actually one of my favourite late round targets, and he's really savvy pick. Travis Boak in the ninth. I really like that pick as well as potential F1, just for absolutely free. But my favourite pick was actually David Mundy in the sixth. And look, it's been amplified by the Connor Blakely thing, but I really feel, especially when you look at the guys who were drafted in front of him, that it was a really canny pick. So I like that one by number three. He did it well there. I obviously had a number of good picks, especially Jared Redden, whose social is going to bat for like I've never seen. I know the boys spoke about Treloar in the third, but actually my favourite pick is Jager in the end of the ninth. I'm really keen on O'Meara this year, and I think he, around the stage that there were some pretty questionable defenders and forwards flying off the board, I'm pretty happy to get a potential 100-plus mid.
And I will say, maybe not a big fan of your last one, but I reckon Warney had a really good run home. I don't think yours was too bad either, with Webster, Parrish, Danham, and JJK, Lysette, and Jay Cameron, which I reckon brought you home pretty well and actually made your squad look quite solid.
Well, I think that's the thing, Statesman, about the strategy I was trying to employ about just, and that's probably why I missed the ruck run, is just punting forwards. Like, you can still get guys at the end. Like, even, like, there's other guys I'm still keen on who are going to be in the pool who I'd be quite happy taking a flyer on for my bench. Like Chera on the bench or Dow. I think he actually got picked up, but there's a number of guys there in the forward line who are still floating around. Like, I think Taylor Walker's set for a bounce back. Like, there's guys are plenty in the forward line.
And Doss, can I just add that I just want to do a big call out to We Got Big Cox, because I reckon he drafted this by planning his year, but he drafted to piss me off, because I look how many boys of my boys that he took before I was going to take them. It's actually quite incredible. So thank you very little for nothing, Big Al.
We actually sent him your ranks before we did the draft.
Yeah,
just snipe him, man.
All right, my own fave pick. It's a late one as well. I don't know what you guys' are thoughts, though, but Charlie Curnow at pick 157 in the 16th round. I just think there's huge upside value there with his start to last year, and he had 3 tons throughout the year. I know the problem with Carlton potentially being rubbish again, well, definitely being rubbish again. I just think at age 22 season, I was pretty happy where I got him, and I don't think he'll slide that far in normal drafts with his sort of name value as a Carlton supporter or something will snap him up earlier, but I was pretty happy getting him there. And my favourite of other people's picks, I actually also had Steve's Adam Treloar pick at pick 28. So on the little article write-up that we've got to accompany this, it's just had to do a bit of research, and looking at how consistent he's actually been, not only scoring, obviously we know he can score, but he's been playing, the amount of games he's played every year before this season, he's been one of the most consistent players. And I think we've sort of forgetting that. Hopefully the hamstrings hold up. It is a tricky issue with recurring injury, the hamstrings. But I liked that at pick 28. And a couple of other sliders. Unfortunately, I have to shout out the Statesman for it. Jay Gresham at pick 151 could be really good value as well. And my other B-grade teammate here, Cam, pick 156, Dom Tyson. I reckon that could be cheeky. That could be cheeky for me, but they might be a bit under the radar for what you guys are looking for in the best pick section. What are you guys' thoughts there?
Well, just because you picked Treloar, it's just hashtag sucking up to the boss.
it's a solid pick. What can I say? Okay, on to least.
I think it's pretty interesting, the whole favourite thing. Like, a lot of the picks, they've been forwards who were drafted late.
Mm.
I'm just saying.
On to least favourite pick, or the pick you think is poor value. I know Steve is eager to get his opinion out on this one, so kick
us off.
No.
Someone else can go first, because they're going to take the cherries, and I had a little sneaky one for later. Doss, I'm going to throw you under the bus here, but that's
fine. I'll kick it off. My least favourite pick was round six, where I took Jeremy Howe. I was contemplating taking Gaz there as my fourth midfielder. Team still worked out pretty well, but I actually wanted to go, should have gone Gaz over that one, but didn't lose out too much, but yeah, that was it. And for someone else, I actually don't really like Zeno's pick four of the Hoff. Felt a bit early for me. He might have just picked him up on the reliance that Ryder is going to injure himself throughout the year and miss a big chunk of football. But I don't see him sustaining that 100 average where if you are picking him at round four, that's where you think he's going to average this year. And I'd see him at least a 10-point drop if Ryder stays fit. That's what I didn't like for this year. What have you got, Cam?
So for me, it was sort of... For mine, it was actually Zeret at four. At five, sorry. The more I thought about it, and I said it sort of straight after, I actually think there's one pick for pick four, and anything after four, if he's there, is Lloyd. I think Lloyd's a must-have from four onwards this year.
Wow.
Yeah, and... I mean, Zeret's going to be great. He's got a mild Cindy at the moment, so he's probably going to see the first few weeks on the sidelines. But I'd suggest that Lloyd's going to be so big with the new rules that he will justify not only a captain choice, but also anything from pick four.
So who buggered up pick four then?
Oh, I reckon that might be someone who's picked Patrick Cripps. Who did that?
Can we talk about pick four? Because that's a snapshot. First mock draft with everyone, and I get pick four. Who are you guys picking there? Because I stewed over that pick, and Patrick Cripps, I do have far higher in my ranks than everyone else. I've got him, I think, second behind McRae at the moment, which is probably huge. But how he stormed home last year and the fact that he played all the games, like I think all the other players we're talking about here, Merritt had an injury-riddled year. Kelly, obviously, but for me, it was between Kelly and Cripps, and, you know, I might have massive regret not going Kelly. But the other one I thought about was Lloyd going that early, but with the captains on, I just couldn't justify it. But what are you guys' thoughts on the pick four? Because I struggled with it, honestly.
I think in Dream Team drafts, it's going to be the hardest pick to be not second-guessing yourself. I'll put it that way. And I think you can go a number of different ways. It's probably a mid or a defender, and I don't have a problem with it, man. You pick Patrick Cripps, I got no beef with that. What's wrong with great. That? If you like Patrick Cripps, that's awesome.
It only becomes difficult because of Titch. Otherwise, pick four was actually quite easy because it was whoever was left out of the big four.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I think we sort of mentioned my own least favourite pick was probably the Billings one. That was the other one I stewed on. I didn't really know which way to go there. So I picked him up, I think, where was that, in the fourth round. Honestly, I'm not too... Probably the articles actually coming out have definitely had an effect on me lately, and I've been like, oh, it's not too bad, that pick. But I don't know, that's one that could go either way. And my least favourite pick from someone else, sorry, Archie, I really didn't like Taylor Adams at pick 20. Yeah. I could be completely wrong with that one as well, because I don't know, he could bounce back, but... I feel like he was only good after Treloar was injured last year. And then we've also got Beams coming in. And I think Statesman and Cam touched on it last week in the midfield pod about how they feel like out of the mouths to feed at Collingwood, he's probably one of the worst like disposals. And I just think maybe he gets sort of not pushed out of the midfield, but he might be the one that rotates a bit more and just doesn't play as much in there. But... yeah, at pick 20, with the other names on the board, I'd still probably prefer some of the other midfielders that went after him.
Can we just talk about Archie's draft? Because I think it's really important to touch on what... No, and this isn't to shit-can him, because I know everyone's smirking. But I think we need to talk about the opportunity cost associated with drafting Brody Grundy number one.
Yep.
Because you are at absolute mercy about what comes back to you. Now... if all the defenders go, the top-tier defenders, you're probably not drafting your D1 until the 4-5 turn.
Mm.
And like, let's be honest, like it's probably easy to say that Hearn was a bad pick at the 4-5 turn, but realistically, if you didn't pick a defender there, it's at the 6-7 turn? Like, and that's really hard. So he's getting left with no top-tier mids, no top-tier defenders. Probably the top two forwards have gone off the board. I think it's a really hard spot to be in. And I'm really cagey about drafting Brody Grundy number one because we see so much value at the back end of drafts. Like Statesman, you've got Cal Sinclair at the arse end of the draft. Like, if he's 20 points behind, but you've made that points up elsewhere, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's really important not to lose sight of the fact that, yes, Brody Grundy can be so much better than number two or number three or number four or whatever, but the forwards and defenders and mids you are getting on the return rounds are going to be at such a lower value. I really think it's very important to consider, and you really have to be okay with it. I'm more for Brody Grundy in a 3-4-1-3 style league than a 5-7-1-5.
Yep.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think with Archie's draft, and I guess it'll be posted on the site, but that he probably accentuated the fact that, or the differential of taking Grundy first by not drafting a mid after Taylor Adams until round 7. So it was basically key position, key position, key position, key position, Bont. Right? So you've got your best mid being Taylor Adams, your second best mid being Bont. I don't care what year it is, mids historically score the best. Like, they just always are the best. And you've taken 7 rounds to get 2 of them. Like, that to me is, you've lost a lot of points there, even if you've gone... you know, I'm big on Steve's theory in regards to forwards being sort of interchangeable and being able to sort of win your league through picking them up off the waiver throughout the year. He's gone Heaney, Buddy and Robbie Gray, so 3, you know, good, really good forwards in the first 6 rounds. It's not a bad draft, but I think it's just he's probably...
He's cornered himself.
I think the strategy is wrong. He's absolutely, yeah.
Alrighty, I think we kind of touched on it there. Everyone's done their least favorite picks. I think Steve has. Is there any pick?
He's just coming on a long run up.
Yeah, I didn't.
Fire him up.
Okay.
Yeah, all I didn't do mine, but I actually thought Nick Newman in the 7th was a howler. I can't be confident in Nick Newman at all. Yep. Like, I really hate it.
Really?
Like, I've got him ranked reasonably, like in the teens, but I do not want a bar of him in the 7th. Like, at all.
If he can get 85 as a defender for Sydney the year before, how's he not going to be good when he gets game time at Carlton?
Carlton is shit.
They're just going to be in their back line.
But like, is he taking the kick-ins?
I mean, I don't think it matters.
Is he winning his own ball?
The thing that they're going to try and do at Carlton, though, is limit getting hemorrhaged by the scoreboard, and what they're going to have to do is hold possession.
I don't know about that, man. Oh, he might have all the upside in the world. I reckon it's a really steep price to pay. When, you know, like I look at guys like Cal Mills going after him. I look at guys like Andrew McGrath, who are the same kind of guys. Yeah. Like, they're not the kicking guys, but they're the guys you want to find the pill around the ground.
Yeah. I got to say, he was the name that came up for me for the pick you'd like to have over, though. So I'm not disagreeing with you, to be honest.
My pick that I'd like back is I drafted Luke Ryan in the 6th round, which I actually don't think is a bad pick, but I was actually considering Steph Martin there, and I was just wondering if I had have drafted Steph Martin in the 6th round, whether that would have started the ruck run fraction earlier.
Fair enough. Is there any other picks we'd like to have over using hindsight? We'll just quickly go through and name them for us each. Statesman, do you want one?
I just want to thank you for allowing me to have the option to give you my least favourite pick, but that's all right, Doss. So mine is actually in round 6, being Hurley. So I think to me, and sorry to Christian from the extended bench, who I thought drafted pretty well, but to me Hurley at pick 6 was just a desperation defender pick in my eyes, and I feel it's a bit more super coach than it is AFL fantasy scoring. And I think he's had one good scoring year out of his whole career. So going at number 6, when you had Luke Ryan, and correct me if I'm wrong, pick 2 selections after him, and plenty of good value defenders coming in the next 3 or 4 rounds, I thought was a bit of a misstep by him. And the one I would say I would go... incorrect would be Wines, and this is a hindsight, I know, and it's got nothing to do with a skiing accent, but I should have picked Taranto. I thought I was going to get him 2 rounds later.
Now, Doss, I might just jump in and give my pick that I would like to shame a little bit as well, if that's all right, buddy. Tom Langdon at 11.
Yeah, and?
I don't think he's ever done anything, ever, and there's plenty of people after him that have potential for upside.
He's solid. He's solid as a rock, Tommy Langdon. Yeah. Sharon goes not there.
Solid
70. Dunn's not there.
71s. Solid 71s.
He'll be 80.
He's not going to be kicking in. He's not going to be... He will play exactly the same role he's played every year, is my concern. Whereas you've got people like McGrath, you've got people like Brandon Ellis.
I don't like Brandon Ellis at all. He's fucking horrible. He will play the VFL the whole year. Thank you very much.
What did I'll go to bat for you here, Jono. What did... Who are we talking
Tom
about?
Langdon.
Langdon. What did he do once?
I'll go to bat for you. Who are we talking about again?
What happened to the defenders at Collingwood after all the injuries happened? Langdon scored well. He's fine, man. He's fine.
He looked like the goat in the grand final. Far out. Every time I went down there, I was having a heart. He was so good.
You got to remember how much footy that guy missed. I don't think it's a horrible pick.
And I did like how Jono got sucked into your Tommy Mac hype too.
I like Tommy Mac. Ah, no. I'm a Tommy Mac owner.
Well scammed, Steve. Well scammed.
I'm a Tommy Mac owner. I know what he's all about, so I'm fine with him.
Just remember, forwards don't matter.
Yes.
All right, well, is there any other picks you'd like to have over, and also just any final comments on the mock draft here?
Yeah, I'd like my first pick back so I can get Lockie Neal and just shove it up Statesman, that's all.
I just want to thank all the guys who helped out. I planned for it to take about 9 days, and we smashed out 18 rounds in
a weekend.
Like three. So well done to everyone. Thanks to everyone. Make sure you follow the Extended Bench, Warnie, or you're probably already following the GOAT.
OTLS boys.
We got Big Cox. Is just the OTLS boys, despite the fact they've just got absolutely
murdered,
bashed from pillar to post on today's show. I just think Zeno drafted all right. I just think Archie boxed himself in. And actually, Archie shared with us some stats. If you added up the team's averages, the players you drafted, their team's averages over the last few years, what your score would be on a week-to-week basis.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, it's bad news for you, Doc. Actually, it's bad news for four of us. Zeno came in pick one. He'd score 1,638 on a week-to-week basis. Jonathan, 1,610, number two. Christian, 1,601 at pick three. Coxie, 1,584. Warnie, 1,570 in fifth position. Archie, 1,566. Statesman, 1,540. Myself at 1,530. Cam at 1,510. And Doss.
Yeah, take that, Doss.
You're picking up at least 12 points a week. But coming in last, so
well,
but,
that's a huge movement. Now I know why Zeno was drafting Gary Ablett, so he could get that 120 plus average over the last few years thrown into this score.
Zeno drafting Westhoff, backing up that 100 and whatever he averaged this year, no problem. So
and
Jonathan
and
was right up there with the pointy end, which
team
was weird.
Vanilla.
The weird thing there though is that that's obviously going on in history, not declines and not the ups. And yeah. I think, especially that second half of the draft, I went for all the upside, all the breakouts. So Anthony Miles, what would he be recording? An average of about 13.
Oh, he picked the best average out of the last couple of years for these guys.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, like,
all right, well, that's the mock draft. Thanks again to all the drafters as well. And once again, check out the mock draft simulator on the Draft Doctors website to start mocking yourself. That's mock.thedraftdoctors.com.au. Now, we got a heap of questions from social media. We'll try and zoom through these. You can find us at The Draft Doctors on Twitter. All right, so we'll start this off. I'll try and find one that's actually real. Oh, are we just going through all of them?
Go through all of them, all right, man. What do you mean,
I'll just
actually
think
real?
The porn
bites are back, right, from there.
Warnie says, no question. No question, just a massive congrats on 200. Great knock from Warnie there. Kip says, best keeper league pickup for the Draft Doctors since the inception of the pod. Statesman, Cam, or me?
It's obviously DOS because we've booted Jono out of the hosting role finally. This has really paid off.
I don't know.
Look
I
at him go.
Like,
look at him.
Cam...
There's fucking rage building inside him.
Man, no, I'm just checking cricket scores. It's fine. It's all fine.
The Cam hot takes also, though. You see, everyone hates Kane Corns, but the amount of followers and the amount of attention he builds, Cam's really slotted himself nicely into that role as well. So pretty solid there.
Mate, don't give Cam any credit. Hey, congrats on the sex, Cam. Cam had a kid. Well done.
Yay!
Steve, you say...
I thought your Facebook your Facebook post was pretty funny with the pizza.
You say team sex, yeah, Steve. I think it should be team back of the net.
All right. We got Big Cox asks, now that Bose has back status, where would he have gone in the mock draft? Blakely missing half of the year, does he still get drafted? We sort of touched on that earlier. Who wants to take this one?
Yeah, old Jackie boy, he's one of my faves. Yeah, he would have been one of the great D5s. We actually talked about probably half the squads had good risky D5s. I think he can be added to that list. So I think in the round 17, 18, obviously it's only one format that he's got the defender status. So I think that's where about he is. Blakely... he missed half the season. So, yeah, he's gone from being a round 3 pick to probably a round 19 pick.
All right, keeper question from Tappy. What is the value of Doherty for both owners and buyers? What likely trade scenarios are there? I think, is Statesman the keeper guy here, or what do you guys think there?
Statesman?
You can't point at the screen, Jono. Jono, look, we're on a Skype call, everyone. And so on your screen, there's four different things.
But you're in my quadrant. I'm pointing my top quadrant. That's where Statesman is.
Do you know how this works, Jono? You've been 200 shows and you still can't work it out. No. We can't see
you. Why do you think you sacked me as host? That's fine.
I didn't say anything. I just massaged that situation.
So, can I have the question again? Because I was concentrating on a different question and searching up the response. So, what was the question, Doss? Sorry.
What is the value of Doherty for both owners and buyers? What likely trade scenarios are there?
I always talk that an ACL is a two-year injury. Two ACLs, is that a three or a four-year injury? I think his value is quite low. I wouldn't offer Lachie Neal for Sam Doherty by any stretch of the imagination. Jono.
That's fine. He's gone too.
Sorry, that in-house joke. We traded Lachie Neal and Sam Doherty, but
I think Doherty is going to be more value to the owner than the buyers, because people who own him are still going to be hanging on to that 115 average, and the buyers and his value isn't there anymore.
Yep.
Right.
Which is a real worry, because I don't know if you're going to get anything for him.
I think that's the problem. Right. There's going to be a gulf between the offer and the expectation.
Correct. Yep.
Okay, Scott says, the draft doctors, I've got nothing. Great 199 shows and grats on the 200th. Party pies, sausage rolls, mini dim sims and all other deep fried and baked savoury good platters. No salads for celebration. Sorry, Statesman.
Sounds good to me. The party I want to be at.
Long time listener.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Scott.
Aaron says, will you be looking to draft heavy in defence and get a leg up with kick-in points? Can throw a blanket over about 30 to 40 forwards outside the top 10-15, whereas the defenders seem to have much better upside value. Is this the year to go heavy in defence? We've sort of touched on that. What do you think there, Steve?
I think it's interesting because there's a lot of guys who are going to go through late in the draft, guys like Jared Harbrow, maybe guys even who go usually undrafted like Luke Brown, say, from Adelaide. So I think there's certainly guys you can pick up at the back end of your draft, but it's not like forwards where they're so replaceable. So I'm looking to draft those defenders, whereas the forwards, I'm pretty happy mixing and matching. But defenders, I want to be really savvy about who I pick. So I'm certainly looking to square away, and you've probably heard in the mock draft today that I'm really looking for those couple of early ones. And then really picking and choosing my spots with a mid-round guy like Luke Ryan, and then looking to fill it out like Cam did with Harbrow and so forth later.
All right, next question comes from Dane. What's your thoughts on Brad Hill? All reports are saying his body is better than ever and has been training very well. Him and Ed Langdon, surely best wing combo in the game. Love the work, lads. Anyone with a strong take on Brad Hill? I think he averaged 90 a couple of years ago. He does seem to fit the modern footballer of just elite tank that racks it up on the wing, but could you draft him with the expectation that he'll ever go back to that 90 average or even push a bit higher, still being in his mid-20s?
Look, he was a forward a couple of years ago when he did that 90 average, so that's the only way I've got interest in him. He's that outside run seagull type, but he just doesn't accumulate enough of the ball. He might do it a half dozen times a year, so not too much interest in me. Unless he's one of those players this year, like we always say, just pop, who are just sitting there on the waiver wire, and if you can scoop him up and score as well for the rest of the year for you, that's the only interest I've got in him.
I'm pretty happy picking up Brad Hill late. I need a bench option, especially in your Supercoach leagues.
Only if...
Oh, I'll be happy
as
with
a pure mid, not for me.
Right, Jake asks, who averages the most, Dunkley or Menegola? Anyone strong there? Cam, you got something for us?
I will say I'm worried for both of these players what their role is. Dunkley's potential is massive, there's no doubt. So if I'm going to back either one of the two, I'll go Dunkley.
I'm pretty confident in Dunkley, to be honest.
Dunkley.
All right, and is Andy Brayshaw a fair chance at going higher than Hannes, Miles, Libber with more midfield time and an increase in time on ground? Comes from Jake as well. I picked up Andy Brayshaw and he went incredibly late in our draft. I think it was the last pick, but this was before Blakely, so probably a bit tainted there as to where he would actually go. What do you guys think? Hannes is going ahead of him, surely, and probably Miles, but Libba didn't even get drafted in ours. So what do you guys think on that?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident he's better average than Libba. The other ones, I'm not sure. He might be there with Miles for me, but it's second season. So Miles is very seasoned. So he might, I'd probably pick Miles in front of him, but I love Andrew Brayshaw going forward. I think he's a superstar, but he'd be third on that rung out of four for me.
Dan has just a comment here. Congrats on the great milestone. Discovered your podcast a few months ago and glad I did. I've really enjoyed the great insights you guys provide and the awesome humor on the show. Thanks, Dan, for that. Callum.
Must have been listening to the Supercoach
show
there.
Oh! Didn't hear any trilogy talks on the B-Team pods.
You didn't even say Lord of the Rings, man. Like,
exactly.
They're like
exactly.
The top 10 IMDBs. Get around the IMDB. They're three of the top 10 or something. It's just completely wrong. Callum, how much impact does a player's preseason have on their draft ranking? For example, the fact Merritt had an issue, or even Tom Lynch from the Tigers Statesman?
Absolutely massive. I always say, go the players that have had a great preseason. Take your risky picks later on for those that have had an interrupted preseason. It is absolutely proven there'll be one or two that'll not fold into that information and data, but the rest of them do. So follow the ones that have had a good preseason. Merritt's two interruptions, just a little bit lighter on him. He'll take time to build.
All right, Golden Tink 12. Who is the best candidate to go McRae Grundy-like and go ham up to 120 average? Anyone got a take on that? Statesman, another one?
No, absolutely no idea who's going to go ham. To be quite honest with you, obviously one and two in our draft. So you, at the moment, you've got to pick that those are the two that are going to be right up there. I don't know who's going to come from left field, to be honest. Zerett was a chance until he got injured. So I'm a little bit worried of who else could really put up their hand at the moment. So you go with the safe options.
Matt Crouch,
Cerberus. Wow.
Yeah, I'll give you four. And
wow.
Yeah, no, this is could. This is could. This isn't will. And
yep.
this is why these players are potentially going up there. One, Jake Lloyd, because of the kick-in thing, that we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe it does. I don't know. But the other three are mids. Nat Fyfe, Cerberus, and... Sorry, who was my one?
Callie Coniglio.
Oh, Fyfe.
You said Fyfe twice.
Oh, sorry, Lockie Neal.
Is he that good?
Lockie Neal. He is that good.
Where's the five? Two, give me the five.
Well, he's going to do it in Supercoach and Triple. No, the other one's Lachie Neale, and it all comes down to opportunity and competition within your own team, right?
Yep.
So once you remove the competition, like Neale's gone from Fife and Fife's gone from Neale, so there's all this potential. Look what happened to Patrick Cripps once Bryce Gibbs and Sam Doherty went out. Absolutely banged it out of the park because there's no one else to win the ball. Okay, and you look at Seb Ross, his second half, he's absolutely flying. There's like I know Jack Steele's fine. He should be good. Dan Hand, you know, he's good for a 60 average. So there's very little competition down at St Kilda. I am looking for the situations where there is no competition. Look at Hawthorn. When you really think about the Hawthorn midfield, there's not a huge competition for points there. That's what Tom Mitchell was able to just do what he wanted to do, like despite the fact he's an absolute superstar. Did you have another shit draft pick in your mouth there, Doss? Is that what you were doing? Jono, you're hosting.
I don't have the questions, though.
I'd really look at those situations where there's less competition for inside touches. Like, I'm looking at Collingwood, and like, just look at what happened with Geelong once Ablett went there. There's more competition for the contested ball. There's only so much that can go around. That's where I see the guys being capped, whereas there's less competition, they're less capped.
I'm worried about Geelong.
All right. One other one that could go there, and it has to happen if every single thing goes right. Angus Brayshaw, that's why I snapped him up in the third round there. Another great pick from Dossie. Jim Bob asks, you have pick five in a 10-man single-season draft, and Grundy, McRae, Danger, and Jay Kelly are off the board. Who do you take? So Cam went with Merritt in our draft at pick five. Lloyd, yeah. Any other picks there?
Patrick Cripps.
Hey. All right.
And Lachie Neale as listed as one of the four that could go over the 120 plus. Nat Fyfe. So there's quite a few options there.
In Supercoach, I would say Nat Fyfe is pretty locked in for number five. Yep. And Patrick Cripps as well, to be honest. Like,
agreed.
Yep.
All right, Paul asks, would you guys take Grundy or Gorn with your first pick or just go for an average ruck, e.g. Jacobs with a late pick? With the mock draft site, I feel it makes my team balance very difficult if I take a ruck with my first pick or so. I haven't valued rucks much previously. And I think, he's preaching to the choir here. That's what you guys have pretty much said throughout this episode. As rucks, you've canned Archie for picking Grundy number one, basically.
No, we haven't canned him.
That wasn't canning. That's just discussing the opportunity cost associated with doing it. You can do it, but who asked that? Jim Bob?
Is Paul.
Paul. Yeah, it just comes down to team balance. Like, your team looks better when you don't.
And you've got to be really savvy if you do pick Grundy, pick one as well, as to what's happening around you too.
And I just want to clarify, I was bagging Archie.
It is interesting that he's obviously being helped here by the mock draft site, just repeating and seeing what does help him out, and that the ruck, and that he's noticed that pattern, and we've sort of figured it out doing this mock. So it is pretty useful to do these mocks. I wouldn't have thought of that as well, if not having a look. I think Grundy for me was probably. Might have done the same thing as Archie had I been put in that situation. So, I would have taken McRae.
But especially when you reach into your pockets for just a little bit of shrapnel and upgrade the simulator and draft against our ranks, then you'll really see what's happening in drafts rather than the other losers out there. Sorry,
geez, how much is that, Steve?
It's only $9, Cam, and really, it's a great way to support the show. Like
your prices are crazy.
They're crazy. There's no steak knives to go with these deals, but like realistically, like it's $9. You get a great sense of pride in helping us keep the show running. We don't, there's no Patreon or there's no ads or anything like that. There's just an hour and 40 minutes, according to this podcast, of just complete trash.
And speaking of the Rucks, Statham's also said that the Rucks don't back it up unless your name is Dean Cox. So they always have that tumble the year after.
Yeah, they seem to.
TWR, with Ultimate Footy giving Rowan Marshall ruck status, who gets the final keeper spot in a pretty deep keeper league between him and Chera would be fielding either in the forward line.
Easy.
Yeah.
Chera.
Jarrah.
Jarrah.
Alrighty. Okay, next question comes from BJ. Is there a more terrifying phrase for keeper coaches than innocuous incident at training?
No, there's not. Good question.
All right, well, maybe we've got this video of Jack Watts. Dot, dot, dot.
Ben, in real dream team, would you start Gorn/Steph so you don't have to worry about trading in the ruck since we have 30 trades barring injury, or go with Longer at 285k from Ben Statesman?
Hashtag brand.
Yeah. Mm. Honestly. Come on. Come on, boy.
And I will say, if you're playing salary cap, there's only one salary cap gig, and that's AFL Fantasy. Let's move on, Doss.
All right, Rob, taking Grundy early really seems to compromise balance, particularly in defence. Do you see a world where he slides at all?
I don't see him sliding. Because people will hang shit on you if you don't draft him. Like, you'll feel that peer pressure in your draft room. And that it's a good looking average when you come.
But wouldn't that be ultimate though? You just sit there with a big fuck you if you don't draft and pick one or two.
I don't think you have to, but I think you just got to be prepared for what's going to happen on the return rounds.
Not much.
Like, think about it like this: like, if you drafted Cam's team, except you had Grundy pick one or some variation of it. Say you had drafted instead of Taylor Adams, Adam Treloar and Seb Ross, and then just picked up X forward and X defender. Like, you might have chosen Tui or the Chad, right? Hypothetically, the team looks a lot different.
Yeah,
that's why I should go into our mock website and try these variations out.
Ooh, really hitting home there, Johnny. I like it.
Moving on, except we're frozen.
And I will say, while we're waiting for him to come back, just to answer Ben, just filling up space, the reality is if you're playing that format, you need to go set and forget. And Gorn and Steph aren't your set and forget options. Goldie are. I hope that solves his problem. And don't go Longer at 285. Impact from King Kong Donkey. Impact on Ed Langdon. Now Blakey is out.
Can't hurt.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, Ed Langdon. What? Maybe. Yeah. Just talks me in the show. That's as good as the microwave. Friction. Yeah, it's an interesting one because I always sort of thought Ed Langdon is just the pure outside player. Like, that was his role, and I didn't see that. Neil's departure, when it was Neil, that affected him, but maybe it does. I don't know. Maybe you can get rid of those crappy away games.
Yeah. So I think it doesn't impact him in a negative way by any stretch of the imagination, but whether it's positive is yet to be seen. Yeah. So from Punchy, am I getting sucked in by preseason chat, or is Gresham really going to get significant midfield time? If so, what do you guys see him scoring?
Yeah, I don't see it myself, but I know he's got the junior profile as a midfielder. They've just recruited another midfielder. I think it's drawing a long bow, but I think he's one of those late forwards you can take a dart throw at, and if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out, and you just grab another one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we'll finish off with this, gentleman. I think I need to be the one that says it because you are the founders on the 200th show. Congratulations on what you started. If you look through the simulator, that is something that has just never been seen in Australia. The website is magnificent, and we can give Jono and probably his family a pat on the back for that.
No, Jono, but brother then, Ross, it's all him, not me.
And I think probably the most important step that you've actually made, if you've expanded it further than just you two in getting very young, fit, athletic, great voice people like myself and Doss involved. Let's never mention Cam again, ever in our history. But It's your baby. It's your project. You're two great mates from a long way back from beers at the RSL and Lawn Bowls. But congratulations, gentlemen. The 200 episodes are both due to you. So well done. Congratulations. And now your platform to say something and thank the people that have helped you put it all together.
Well, thank you, Statesman, for coming on board. I think after the first year with Steve, we're running it out of his unit there in Frankston. Was it north or south? South.
Mm.
We'll say Frankston's.
Yeah.
In those hot, sweaty days over the summertime there, and didn't know what the hell we're doing, so we're just learning on the fly. So, and now we've got over 1,500 Twitter followers, Facebook followers, so very appreciative of everyone who sends us a message, and we do our very best to get back to them in a promptly manner. Doss and Cam, more so Doss and Cam, for coming on the show and helping us out now, taking the pressure off of us so we can, you know, do more stuff and bring the mock website and update the website and do all the stuff as well. So very thankful to everyone out there who's helped create the hashtag brand with us as well.
Yeah, I think we're pretty lucky. And yeah, thanks, Statesman, for your warm words. They're very much appreciated. And my great mate over there, we've certainly had a long stretch and probably didn't think we'd get this far. But I just want to thank the listeners. You know, honestly, you guys clicking on things and liking tweets and recommending articles and all that sort of stuff and leaving iTunes reviews and certainly spending $9 on the Mockdraft website. Don't want to run that into the ground at all. But it makes, like, that's why we do it, and we certainly enjoy talking fantasy, and I think that's what we all enjoy, is just talking a bit of fantasy. And the best part about it, I think we've got the best listeners. I've got to say, like, I know podcasts will say that, but I see the tweets and Facebook comments that some other podcasts get that are probably bigger than ours, or maybe not, but, and there's a lot of disparaging comments and all that sort of stuff. But I think when our listeners we have a disagreement or whatever, it's usually a very reasoned discussion, or why do you like this guy, why don't you like this guy? And I really think that's fantastic, because difference of opinion's freaking awesome.
Yep.
So the fact we can all enjoy it together but still have different opinions, That makes it very enjoyable for myself, especially when it's done in a fun manner. So I just want to, thank the listeners. You're awesome. Doss, welcome back.
And
hello.
And I will say, for being part of, I'm unsure what the amount is, but I think it'd be around the 120, 130 shows, whatever it may be, that I've been part of the crew, that the amount of support that we've actually had from the other people that run their podcast has been absolutely incredible, and it really is a community. So get to 200. I know there's a few shows that have gone for much longer than us, but to be still around after 200 is a credit to both you guys, but the amount of support between that community, and hopefully a fair few of us will be getting together on the 10th of March when the traders visit Melbourne. But they're a really good celebration when you get all the people that have been involved in these podcasts, big, small, super coach, well, not so much, but AFL fantasy, and drafting, and the new model, the Keeper League. We're great to be involved with those guys as well. It's quite enjoyable. And then we have some young hacks that come on from South Australia that do a few decent things and try to jump on our bandwagon, Doss.
Oh, thanks, Statesman. Yeah, no, and congratulations to you guys as well for the 200th. Massive effort. So
yes.
Yeah, I'm struggling,
but that wraps
seriously
us all up for our 200th. A very, very long show, unfortunately. There's a bit of delay in South Australia, so that's why Doss is overlaying me. But thank you very much for listening. That's 200 in the can. Well done to Jono and Steve that has made their little baby a really big thing now. So congratulations. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.